I'm Miriam Tosi. Look at her smile.
What's up, Malcolm?
Yeah. You're alive today, huh?
I'm alive.
How's that sound to you?
Great.
Thought so. She'll be dancing before long, people. So yeah, welcome to another show of American Riddle. I haven't been saying that lately. Welcome to American Riddle. I've just been jumping into it.
Welcome.
I like this song. I was listening to it earlier driving in. I was like, that's a good song. Reminds me of my childhood.
Why?
Most songs do. Because I remember my old man. We went to see this movie. I saw this movie. I'm gonna age myself really quick. My old man took me to go see Star Wars upon its release, and I think there were two films released that time, or at least where I was at. There were a couple films, and this was one of them. What was it? What was the name of the movie?
Saturday Night Fever.
Sorry, people. Podcast-itis. So, I think we were going to go see Star Wars, and this film was out. I was just a little kid then, but it was sold out. So we ended up going to see
this instead.
Saturday Night Fever, which as a child, we were all amped up to see, you know, Star Wars, or at least at the time. And I saw this, and I was blown away by this. Wanted to be Italian. This was like one of the first. This was one of my first memories of being infatuated with the Italian culture, or at least the way I saw it as a child. You know what I mean? Tony Manero. You know,
Vinnie Barbarino.
That's right, Tony Manero. That's right, Vinnie Barbarino from Welcome Back, Carter, aka John Travolta. Motherfucker was a prince. The Prince of Hollywood.
He was.
Oh, and everybody wanted to be him. Wanted to feather my hair. Couldn't feather my hair. I could not feather my hair for the life. Couldn't do it. Can't do it with an afro. There's no way to feather your hair with an afro.
No.
Is there?
No, not that
I had a big afro back then, too. Old man wouldn't let me cut it.
Really?
Nah.
He wouldn't let you cut it? Really?
Nah, I had a big afro. I told you they called me Lamont. I'm telling you. It was horrible, people. I'm telling you. My childhood. You think you had issues. But those weren't really issues. It was good times. So, yeah, Tony Manero. That was, it just had everything in it. You had the polyester, the suits, the shoes, gyrating hips. You know what I mean? A young, skinny Malcolm Riddle trying to gyrate his... I still can't really gyrate my hips. Sorry, ladies. Sometimes I can get it together. Yeah, I try. Yeah, I get it. You gotta get me super, super duper drunk on the dance floor. Picture it. Yeah.
I am.
Uh-oh. That was me. You feeling it? You guys, come on, get it together. So yeah, enough of that. That's what's up.
Nice.
So we got my main man. Welcome to the show, Miriam Tosi, and we have special guest Tony Guida in the house. Tony. How are you, sir?
Excellent.
There you go. Now you can open up.
Now I can talk. I'm not in the mood anymore.
Oh.
There's a little theme song for you, Tone. That's right. AKA Sinius Vice in the house.
With Curtis?
That's right.
Go and sin some more.
Used to be known as the Tuesday guy. Tony the Tuesday guy at my wine shop. Because he used to...
What does that mean?
Because he used to do wine tastings every Tuesday at St. Patrick's Episcopal Church, the Washington Wine.
Washington Wine and Cheese Seminar. They're still doing it.
It was Tuesdays?
Yeah, still every Tuesday.
Yeah, so every Tuesday, Tony would go, and then, I don't know, I just started calling him the Tuesday guy. I would write up an email newsletter, Tony the Tuesday. And he used to even say it sometimes, I'm the Tuesday guy.
But it is a random, like, it's not the most common night for a,
no,
or,
no.
For a tasting.
Every Tuesday.
You know?
I think I wasn't there at the very beginning.
Unique.
They're like 45 years old now. Oh. And I wasn't playing when they started, but they picked Tuesday because there was no competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tone would come to my wine shop, I think Fridays Friday nights. And we developed a great bond and relationship over the course of time. But yeah, I coined him the Tuesday guy. Yeah. So what's up, Tone? You're on the mic now. I wouldn't let Tony talk earlier. People just give you a little backstory. Tony was talking. I was like, save it for the podcast.
It was
awful. Save it for the podcast. So I wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't let him talk.
Open a bottle of wine, mm-hmm. taste the wine, can't talk about it. Or yeah. Save it for the
Yeah, yeah. He likes talking, so.
Now, well, it's the wine, you know.
Now my man is all mic'd up, and yeah, we're ready. So, Mariam Tazi, I did want to run some stuff by you.
Oh.
Real quick, just to recap, coming off our last episode, a couple things went down. Of course, we ended it with the Golden Globes. We had the Globes.
Yeah.
It went off without a hitch. Great show, by the way. I don't know if you watched it,
but I
watched it. I think Tina Fey and Amy Poehler did a fabulous job. They looked great. They look really, really good.
They did.
You know, we had a good night. It was fun. I don't think there was any issues. Tony's opening up another bottle of wine, people. I did get a chance to go see that movie Nebraska.
Oh, and what do you think?
I need to pull it up. Starring.
I was curious about that one after the awards.
Yeah, I was too. I wanted to see it. So Nebraska is a film by Alexander Payne. Getting a lot of reviews. Alexander Payne, starring Bruce Dern and Will Forte. I call him Fort. That's just me, people. That's what I call him. So we all know Alexander Payne. I think, Tony, you may have seen Sideways, the movie Sideways.
Yes.
Yeah, so Alexander Payne directed that. He had directed About Schmidt, Election. He did one of my favorites, The Descendants. So he comes off with Nebraska, and it's about an aging father who makes a trip to from Montana to Nebraska because he thinks he's won some mega sweepstakes. And he thinks he's a millionaire. So, that being said, the film just kind of, it's kind of like a, you know, father and son trying to, you know, build their relationship or rekindle their relationship. Very depressing movie in a lot of ways. Yeah. And it's a great film. Great.
So it's not a comedy.
It is. There's some very funny things in it. But, yeah, it's I found it to be a little depressing.
Downer.
Yeah, well, it's up and down.
Okay.
You know, but yeah, it's just, it looked great. Great feel. Bruce Dern's phenomenal. Phenomenal. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm tongue twisted. The Will Forte was excellent in it. It's funny, a lot of comedians try to, when they make this, or when they start to transition into more serious roles, it's good to watch because comedians have so much range and diversity, not just, you know, being comedians. One of the things that make comedians is because they usually have, you know, some sort of
range and diversity.
And they're dark, you know, they come from a, I can't say a dark background, but they've definitely have had their ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, people think that when they see a comedian that it's all, you know, all jokes and everything's funny, but there's a lot of struggle, a lot of pain there.
Yeah.
A lot of pain. So I saw that great film if you get a chance to go see it, but it's not going to be the feel-good movie of the year.
Okay.
That's for show.
Okay.
What else do we have?
Did you see Wolf?
I did see The Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Got some in your throat.
Something in my throat.
It's all right, Tom.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I loved it.
See there? That's what I'm talking about.
Good.
Yeah. Googa mooga.
I thought it was excellent.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, and the fortuitous sex was a real bonus. But the movie was great without it.
Excess in its best right there, right up in your face. And I think that's what a lot of people are having a hard time digesting is the fact that there is so much. Like now they're counting how many times they said fuck in the movie.
They are.
It's like almost 600 times. I mean, it's a course of a 3-hour. I mean, you know,
it's a 3-hour movie, 2 hours and 59 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it very satisfying. I mean, I enjoyed it from start to finish.
That's great.
Have you seen American Hustle?
No.
We've talked about this in a podcast. Kind of parallels some of Scorsese's work. I would like to see get your feedback on that. But they won some awards. A lot of people. A lot of things being mixed up. I didn't have a problem. I was fine with the show. It's, you know, Hollywood glitz and glam. Miriam's rolling her eyes, people. But it is what it is. It's a party. It's a show. And I think for what it is and for what it was worth. The show went on and it went off. Went on without a hitch. Yeah. Is it on without a hitch or off without a hitch?
I went on.
No hitches.
Yeah, just no hitches.
It could go either way.
Oh.
So, other than that, we're sitting here with Tony Guida, a.k.a. Cineas Vice, and he's we've got a few wines open on the table today. So we're probably going to take you, the listeners, on a tour of some of the wines that we have on the table. So what do we got, Tone? What are we doing?
Well, our featured winery for the day is Three. Spelled...
Three what? Four?
Three. T-H-R-E-E.
Let me see the let me see the label. All right. So it's three with and with the letter three. So yeah, it could be 33.
But no, it's three. Mm-hmm. That's his name. Three.
Got you.
So it's hard to believe, but then it's easy to remember. So anyway, the owner is and winemaker is Matt Klein.
Yeah.
Formerly of Klein Vineyards, one of the Klein brothers. And he moved from there in the end of 90s, about 2000, I think, something like that, and went with some people called Trinitas, who have a similar, starting up with a similar philosophy to his about why he's calling his wine Three, which is a, please read the back of that thing. So, in a minute. It doesn't have to be right now. Anyway, this guy makes great wine, and it's never overpriced. You can get it at a very reasonable price. Most of the wines of his that I have, I got for less than $20.
Really?
Really.
All of his wines are like that? They're all in that price range?
Most of them. He has some that are higher, but even those, once in a while, you can find a sale or something. But it's become, his wines have become 85-90% of the wines I buy these days.
I saw in your cellar.
Yeah, there's just lately, last few years, I'm not buying, you know, wines to put down for 30 years anymore. I'm 71 years old.
You want to drink them?
So I want wines I can drink, but I don't like wines that are designed to be drunk young, and so these are, they can go a long time, but they're easy to drink now. And today we have two Zinfandels. Mm-hmm. One is an 07 that you have, and it's the Evangeo Vineyard, single vineyard. And that's the 07, and the second one is a 2010 Live Oak Vineyard Zinfandel. Both made by Matt Klein. They're going to be very extracted and have a lot of serious layers of flavor and aging potential.
Does he do more Zins?
Yeah, he sources his grapes. He doesn't have a vineyard, and he pretty much specializes in Zin. We have a Mataro that he makes, and I like that a lot. Well, I like everything he makes.
There
he makes
a Carignan, the Petit Syrah.
Yeah, I'm reading on the site that he has Mataro and Petit Syrah.
Mm. Okay, Matt. Well, let's taste the wine. Taste that one first. So, you want to talk about anybody want to say anything about this?
Well, the one I'm trying right now is a lighter Zin.
Is it the 07 that we're trying first?
Yeah, it's
nice and juicy. Not too tannic on the finish.
No, but nice tannin. I think it's still a little tight. The fruit's all not really expressing itself. I think it's got years to go.
Yeah.
How long do you think a bottle like that would age?
It varies with the grape, and you know how it's made in response to what's in the grape.
Like Zins, I think we talked about this on one of the last podcasts. People don't normally think Zins can, you know, stand the test of time, but I think, you know, we've opened up some, and they hold up pretty nice.
Well, first, let us say that Zins are not white or pink.
No,
that's not what we're talking about. Zinfandel is a red wine grape that makes a robust, complex, got a very characteristic flavor, widely used It's very closely related to the I forgot the word, the Italian one.
Primitivo.
Primitivo, yeah, sorry. They're almost twins. And there's a lot of it out there, and you can get a lot of it. You can get some very pleasant, made-to-be-drunk, young, no big deal, but nice quaffing wines for well under $10.
Yeah, but Primitivo, to me, has a more old-world style. They're not as fruit-driven as some of the Zins, you know, coming out of California. They tend to be a little bit more kind of rustic, a little bit, you get more terroir, I think.
Maybe that's
out
why
of them.
I like them better.
Well, they, you know, you can take a vine,
yeah,
and clone it, and plant one clone in Italy and the other, mm-hmm. and the other, so it's the same thing. Plant them in two different places, you're going to get two different wines.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes hand in hand, just because of the the soil, the
right.
climate.
Yeah, it's all of that. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. They're very different. I like the California ones, the well-made ones, because once you get up above $10 or $15, you start getting some really interesting. Often you find them. There's some that are you can actually sit around and talk about for $12 or so. That's really Zinfandel is a great grape and underappreciated, but it has the better ones have significant aging potential. Maybe 3 years ago, I drank the last of my 89 Matt Klein made wine from when he was with Klein. I think it was 89, and so it was like 20 years old.
Wow.
And as most well-made age-worthy red wines do, it sort of gravitated to that old claret.
Oh, nice.
Character. So the differences become less, and the wine just a well-made wine that's red is going to, if it has a certain general characteristics, it's going to generally age into this a very, very similar thing that's hard to differentiate from, like, old Bordeaux's.
Huh. Yeah, it's been one of my, favorite varietals over the years. It's just a great go-to wine, especially with a variety of food. It goes well with, mm-hmm. from the and some of the other wines or Zins, like the old vine Zins, and even some of the I guess I was going to say late harvest, but the port style Zins I've enjoyed.
Oh, yeah, Terradoro makes a good one.
Oh, Terradoro is excellent.
They make great Zin and a really good little port.
Montevina is a good producer. I think Montevina, is it the same as Terradoro? Isn't it? Same company. Maybe it's the same company.
Yeah, I think Terradoro is
like their upper tier. Same thing with Matt Klein being producing three. Does it say how he got into? I guess he just made the transition from one winery and then did his own, right?
Yeah, I believe there were artistic differences between him and the Trinitas owners, or the other owners. I think he was an owner. I'm not sure about that, but in any event, I think he just wants to make wines the way he wants to make wines, and he doesn't like anybody else involved in
I can understand that.
Telling him how to do it.
Yeah, I can understand. I mean, the wine business pretty much is like that. It's a small community, and there's so many different personalities and so many people trying to do things their way I can respect that. I mean, having been in the wine business for so many years, at the end of the day, I had a conversation with my brother just about the distribution side of it. And, it's at the end of the day, you have to have more control over what you are bringing in and putting out in the market. So everything from a winemaker on down to the person that's, going door to door selling it. It's cool at some point to you know, to work with and or represent a company or work with a company. But after a while, you know, you kind of burn out because I've been in Tony, you've known me for a while. Like I've been in and out of the wine business and back in. And as of late, I just been in a funk trying to find myself in a position where I'm able to work with, you know, kind of like minds, trying to build a team and you know, find my find the best part of me so that I can bring people the best and represent the best products out there. But it's been an uphill battle. It's been you know, sometimes like climbing a hill of feathers.
Yeah, it's you don't really want to be a salesman. You want to be an advocate.
Yeah. And you have to believe in the products that you have. I don't really want to be assigned something because, you know, someone overordered, you know, a bunch of Beaujolais Nouveau or someone ordered a bunch of bad, you know, Cote de Rhone or something, you know. You know, it's just not to, you know, single out the French, but but
there's such an easy target.
But at the same time, it's been really very frustrating for me as of late, you know, to find that path and to walk that line. So I can see why, and I've seen it, you know, throughout the wine business where, you know, winemakers have broken away and you know, kind of found their own path to create their vision and bring it to the table. Mm-hmm. So I can respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's it right there. To be an advocate for something, you know, because you believe in that product. I've talked about this on a podcast where we're trying to get something going with Starry Night Winery. We've tried their wines over the years and I've represented them with more than one company. But just trying to find you know, my place in the market and or trying to collect other labels. It's been challenging to say the least, you know.
Yeah, you ever talked to Bobby Catcher?
I've not, no.
He was employed in a wine store here in Washington.
Yeah.
Where I met him, and right after that he left I don't even think he stopped on the way. I guess he stopped for a little bit with a wholesaler, but he just jumped out almost immediately into traveling around, gathering his own labels, cultivating people, talking to the guy on the, you know, who's growing the grapes, and you know, he says, "I like what you're doing, but there's some things that are wrong, and I'll buy everything that you." That you produce if you will make these quality changes for me. So his name in the business is gold. If his name is on a bottle, you know, you might not like the wine for whatever reason, but you know that it's going to be a well-made example of that kind of wine.
Bobby Catcher, he does more, he brings in more French wines, right?
Mostly French, yeah. I think he's just gotten an Argentine section, but
and he's an advocate. It's exactly what you just said. I think when I opened my wine shop back in the day, I mean, yeah, Bob, that's one of the names that just goes hand in hand in the wine business, Bobby Catcher.
Yeah,
and Tony's right. If you turn that bottle around on the back side, it says, I think it says Robert.
Robert Catcher
selection, yeah. Maybe, I think. Maybe. Yeah. You know. And there are distributors out there, too. Like, I'll specifically, you know, when people are always saying, you know, how, you know, I can see people when they, I could be in Harris Teeter or Wegmans or anywhere, and you see that person looking for wine, and they have that blank look on their face. And I know.
It's always like that.
And sometimes I jump in, you know.
Do you really?
I've been known. Yes, yes. I've been known. They look at me like I'm crazy, too.
I don't.
I got no axe to grind at all, but I'd be walking in the wine aisle and somebody has that
You see it.
1,000-yard stare.
And you know they're in the wrong. They just look.
I always say, "Are you lost or something? Yeah. Can I help you?"
And I say, that might not be the one. You know, I'll say something just to, you know, need some help or something like that. Usually they take a double take at me because Tony looks more legitimate than I do. I look, you know, I could be like, who's this kid? You know what I mean? Just like, all right, that's random.
Yeah, old guys are not a threat.
Mm. Yeah, people usually think they're harmless, but yeah. They're not.
Yeah. Little do they know.
But one of the things you can tell just from being in retail, you know, you can see that. You've seen that blank look.
Yeah, but when I'm not working, I'm not working. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like when I'm at Whole Foods, because I do not. If I'm pouring at Whole Foods, sure, you know. But if I'm not working, I'm not going to go and help. Go out of my way to help a rando person.
Really?
No.
See, and I'm
not that nice, I guess.
I'm always not working.
Oh, well, then that's different.
Yeah, no. I especially when it's wine or anything. I've helped out people, but. If I'm in the wine department, I see somebody, and we could go to one right now, and they'll have that blank look. We should do a show like that. Oh, just randomly walk around with the camera and look for deer in headlights look.
Man on the street.
Yeah. We're like superheroes.
Give people the right wine for the right occasion.
Yeah.
I don't know about all that.
I'll wear the cape, but I don't know if I'll wear the tights.
I'll wear the tights.
Yeah, you wear the tights.
I've worn tights. Doesn't bother me.
But,
it's a fashion statement.
Is that right? Miriam, have you? Mm-hmm. I've worn capes.
I have a couple of those.
Do you really? Yeah, you do. Yeah.
What's going on here?
I don't know.
No one knows.
It always goes into a different direction. But
okay,
let's
slide back to these wines. Okay, we have an older.
I just tried one that's definitely more jammy.
It's
more plum.
The second one.
Yeah.
There's more full flavors.
Yeah, it's younger. Yeah. That's one part. But they're also two different vineyards. Mm. Which is another important.
So completely different.
Important thing.
I mean,
so,
everything from the color, the nose. Wow.
Yep. But I think
it's a tasty.
I think the first one still has two, three, probably more years of aging.
And the first one was it the 2007?
Yeah. That's the one you brought.
I would, if I had a bunch of this, I wouldn't get back to it for maybe two more years.
Hmm. Yeah, it's fun to watch it change, especially after you've opened it and watch it change in the bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, very tasty.
Yeah, it's completely different.
Yeah. But this, maybe not. Depends. If you're going to have food, this is, you know, you want what this has. The tannins are going
to
go well with a red meat kind of, you know, tomato sauce.
People always ask me stuff about that. Like, they always ask... does this pair, or what type of cheese would you pair this up with, or that? I mean, is there a rule of thumb? I mean, both of you cook a lot more than I do, but is there a rule of thumb if you haven't tried the wine? Like, how would you know what to pair the second one up? That's definitely more flavorful. There's definitely more elements of dark fruit compared to an older vintage. How would you know?
Well, you can guess because it's an older vintage.
Yep.
Because wines typically age in a certain way.
Yeah.
So if you're completely unfamiliar with anything about these things, maybe you know something about the kind of grape it is. You make a guess that way.
Yeah.
But if you don't have any information at all, and this is why we have. Wine stores with wine personnel.
Yeah.
Because.
Ask for advice.
You get that stare, that
thousand
yard stare, and then somebody will say, can I help you? And mostly they're going to be motivated to help you, mm-hmm. not just to sell you something.
Right.
Especially in my mind in the smaller stores.
For sure. No, a lot of times we have customers come in and they say, we're making this for dinner tonight. What do you suggest? You know? And
that's a
very, very common
sure.
thing. And I love that.
And
it's fun
for
me to do
that. You have a half a dozen
that.
Things in their price range in any
decent
wine store.
Oh, yeah. And of course, price
store.
Point. But if it's just like, you know, they're doing pizza pasta, I'm like, oh, let's do Sangiovese, you know? Or if you're doing
exactly.
You'll ask what kind of sauce, what kind of spices, you know? Because you really have to get pretty specific, you know, on some things. But... I love the synergy.
I wish I was that good. Like, I know the basics. you know, the basic information. But when it starts, when you start going off and, yeah, I'm cooking this and this is a recipe and these are the spices, you lose me. Like, I have no, okay. I have no point of reference. Here's, I have no way of telling you just here. Because I don't, people think, and I've said this on a podcast before, they think that I'm a foodie or that I'm cooking or drinking wine at night and stuff like that, but I'm not. It's like, people make things for me and I or if I'm, you know, out and about doing a wine dinner or traveling throughout the world, they just make stuff and they put stuff in front of me and I gobble it down and I wash it down and on to the next. I've never been that focused where I've actually studied the art of food preparation and all the magic that's, you know, before it, during it, and after it. Yeah. And I kind of regret that to a certain extent, but in a way, you know, you just bring me stuff and I eat it and drink it and yeah, it's good.
Well,
yeah,
that's really, sucks. I think that's the way most people are about wine, you know?
Yeah, that's true
and
too.
Even people with good palates don't necessarily want to sit there and talk about the wines. I'm a geek about that. So I do it all the time. I like to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to give people advice if they even look like they might want some advice. But mostly, even though they don't know anything about it, they can taste the wine. They go, ooh, this is really, really good. Or this is pretty good. Or, you know, they have their ignorant.
Some feedback, you know.
Yeah, ignorant people in the respectful sense of the term. Ignorant.
He's calling me ignorant people.
You ignorant.
No, the people are ignorant about wine.
People are ignorant about wine. Still, can taste the difference.
No doubt. And that's basically what I'm saying. I was like, I just wish I could offer that bit of advice. Like, take it to the next level. Like you just said, Miriam, you love that. You love that.
I really do.
Yeah. Like with me,
these two wines. Mm-hmm. One is older and a little lighter.
Yeah.
And it's a little more attenuated, and it's got a really nice long finish.
It's beautiful.
But it's reached an age where you might call it elegant rather than robust.
Yeah.
So you would pair this with some plain beef or lamb kinds of things.
I would do filet mignon with this, something really tender. Yeah.
Chicken, I like the way you said that.
Chicken would be good with this too.
Filet mignon.
In certain preparations. But it's a more subtle wine. The second wine is younger. It's from a different place. They're both Zinfandels, but it's from a different vineyard. So everything's different about it. And and since it's younger, it has not reached the maturity stage of the other one, and it's going to go well with more robust things instead of a filet or a lamb chop kind of thing. It would be a grilled steak, ribeye, or something, or even pizza. Although that would go well, but it'd be kind of a waste because,
or like, lots of meat on that pizza. For example, you had like prosciutto or like. Yeah.
All right,
things.
So I'm glad you guys are bringing this up because I get this a lot. What if you don't eat meat?
That's kind of tougher
because I've noticed
mushrooms.
Yes. Mushrooms is my go-to, but I've noticed
tofu.
Over the,
it's all about how what you blend in the tofu, the flavoring that you add to it, and stuff.
Well,
like
over
that.
The course of I'd say maybe the past 5 years. Within that 5 year period, when I do wine events, and depending on where it's at, so if I do a wine event in some places in Northern Virginia, there may be a lot of red, you know, meat eaters. When I do them in different parts, like maybe Northwest DC or places, even out in California, I'm careful about saying, yeah, this would go well with, you know, the filet mignon. I won't say that. Because I can see the people's faces turn. Yeah, yeah. And they're, you know, they're...
They're ready to jump in your ass.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you have no idea. I've had groups of dozens of people, and all of their faces
with
would just
torches
turn.
Torches.
Yeah. It's a crime. It's a crime. Yeah, it's a crime. So I'm careful about when I go into that. So I'm curious, what would you recommend? Now, what would you serve both of these, and you take meat out of the equation? So you said mushrooms,
lentils,
sure. Grill mushroom for the first one.
It's a lighter, more elegant style.
Right. Okay, so you want you talk lentil, you would make a something that's
like a tomato lentil base garlic thing.
Yeah, less of a potage than you think of lentils, which is be a thick, hearty stew-like soup.
Yeah.
You something with more broth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, tomato. You want to might.
Just a little, not very much.
Yeah, as a condiment.
Yeah, no, that totally.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, it'd be great. And you can make that
cheeses
completely,
and stuff. You know,
well,
but
that's not vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we were talking vegetarian first.
Well, and both. Vegan. How's that?
Well, vegan, you leave the cheese out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of this is, you can't make like a prescription for this kind of stuff. So it's, if you have a thing you like, a non-meat thing that you like that has meaty characteristics, that's what you use. My suggestion is my go-to. I love mushrooms. I use mushrooms in everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It absorbs wine really well too, the flavoring as well if you use it as a.
I wonder if there's any restaurants out there, vegetarian or vegan restaurants that have a. Outstanding wine list.
I don't know. Outstanding. Typically, people who are vegan culturally or otherwise don't seem to me to be very interested in the finer points of wine.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is, but that's just been my limited experience. Yeah. And of course, you know, there's not a lot of great wine in the Indian culture. It's not a, you know, it's so tropical that most of what they drink is beer.
Yeah, there's more beer drinking over there.
Yeah. So I wouldn't expect a great wine list unless it was a really, really high end.
I'm just curious.
Indian restaurant.
Well, I know with the rise of. You know, people not eating meat. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's
I feel like they drink wine more for drinking wine. It's not necessarily as much a pairing thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I've had people ask, what about trying like a, you know, vegetarian or vegan tasting, you know, and I'm like, food prep for that would be tough, you know.
This is good. Yeah. But what is this?
It's the salami, the chorizo?
It's a
tasty.
I believe it's Spanish chorizo.
Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, it's good
it's
with
softer
the wine too.
Mm-hmm. Than the other one.
Yep.
Yep.
Now, is that aged?
Smoked.
Well, they're all aged to a certain extent, but not particularly. It's I got it. I probably got it 2 years ago.
Yeah. That's why I asked. Before you cut it, it looked like 100 years old.
Yeah, I bought a bunch of it and I keep it in the fridge. And you break it out when I'm
2 years.
Haven't eaten. Yeah, because it's a cured meat.
It stays.
You know, as long as you don't contaminate it. And these come wrapped up in cellophane. Or,
that's tasty. Yeah,
a sleeve. So
it's good to go.
Yeah.
Well, I eat meat.
Yeah. Me too.
Me too, but, you know, there's a lot of, you can do a lot of really interesting things with,
vegetables?
With eggplant.
Eggplant. That's a really good alternative, too. It's, yeah. It's
what?
It almost turns
alternative
in,
to meat.
Yeah.
And especially some ways that you can cook it. Can you eat eggs? Because it's a. But she doesn't even use that. What she does is she slices them fairly thin and just. She's on Weight Watchers, and so she's really, really careful about this stuff. So she has a spray. She just puts a tiny, tiny bit of olive oil spray
mm-hmm.
on these things and then pats them with some you know, sparse crumbs.
Okay.
So
kind of like a panko.
Yeah. Any kind of breadcrumb, sparsely. It's not breaded. It's just
for a little texture. Yeah.
And then she bakes it, and you know it's excellent.
Mm.
And any kind of there's so many. But most preparations most vegetarian preparations that I have limited experience, but that I run into, they use a lot of curries. There's spices that, to my palate, don't go well with wine.
It's tough to pair sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had someone come in the shop the other day, last week, the wine shop, Vienna Vintner in Vienna, Virginia. And they wanted to do spicy Thai food, but they wanted a red wine.
Yeah, that's not the first thing you go to. Usually we go like Riesling. Or,
that's what I said.
Yeah, Gewürztraminer.
Yeah, that's what I said. That was it. You know, I want to try something different. What red do you recommend? Stump me.
Oof, yeah.
Mm. That nice Gewürztraminer.
How about a rosé?
Mm. Yeah, rosé is an all is.
Yeah,
it's really tough to sell a rosé to somebody sometimes.
Rosé is a tough sell.
It's a tough sell.
It is. I don't like it typically.
Mm-hmm.
There were some I like.
How come you don't like it?
Well, even the ones that are supposed to be good typically come out sweet and not very complex. So they're not interesting.
So a lot of people, what happens is a lot of
and
people.
And I don't mean sweet. I just mean a little tinge of sweet.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they see the color, they color pink, they automatically classify it as in sweet, as in residual sugar, as in white zin, and they call it blush, they call it, you know, a lot of different things, but like a really classic rosé, dry, it's bone dry.
Oh, yeah, most of the rosés d'Anjou are dry.
In Provence, yeah.
But not all of them.
No.
And,
Provence, and I'll say it.
No, speak your language, woman.
I don't know. I tend not to like them. I have found a few that I like, but I'm.
Where are the ones that you liked from? Were they French or?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious because there's some pretty good Spanish ones that are coming out and.
I have had a one or two Italian rosés that I liked, a rosé of Sangiovese or something.
Yeah.
But they're...
Pinot Noir rosés.
But they're...
I like Pinot Noir rosés too, out of Oregon.
But they're not, for me, interesting.
Yeah. They're not super complex.
Even if they're nice, they're not interesting. And I like interesting.
Yeah. Speaking of interesting, I'm out of wine.
Oh, that's interesting.
How many wines do we have from Matt Klein today?
We have three.
We've had two Zins, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a Mataro, which is a Spanish word for Mourvedre.
Ah, and Mourvedre is, origins of Mourved, is that, and I say Mourved, it's just short. I don't know if that's
I have no
correct.
Idea how to pronounce it.
Mourvedre.
Mourvedre. See, I can't remember.
Mourvedre.
I like the way you say it. One more time.
So I believe it comes from France.
Yeah.
Initially, but it's all over everywhere, and the Spanish have it, and their word for it is Mataro, and I think there's actually another word for it as well in Spain. I can't remember.
Let's see.
But so that's but it's a separate grape entirely, and it's very different in California.
Usually used as a blending grape.
Well,
with like the GSNs.
Yeah.
So in California, he's decided to take it on as his own and plant single varietal.
Well, other people have planted him.
Yeah.
He acquires
Monastrell.
Monastrell, that's the other one. Yeah. But every place you grow them, they're different. So I don't really care as long as I can keep track of the name. I know generally what it is, and I have found that mostly I don't enjoy the French ones that are made with that as the primary grape, nearly as much as I enjoy the California ones. Hmm. And Carignan is another blending grape that. Really just has some beautiful expression in California. And they keep trying new stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, the more you taste, the more your tastes get specific and you get pickier and pickier.
Yeah. And your friends want to buy you wine. Never.
Yeah, don't buy me. You know what I do? My favorite wine store in the world is Pearson's, plain old Pearson's on Wisconsin Avenue.
Yeah.
Been there a long time.
Been there from, I started going there when it was a bait and switch kind of place way, way long time ago, 40 years ago. And I didn't like it, and I didn't go back for a long time. And then I went for whatever reason, and it had changed dramatically. They keep wine open, so you can have a taste of something that they're trying to sell now. Plus, if you're actually a customer, and you know, you don't have a card with that, but after a while, they know you're really a customer. They'll open bottles whatever you want, pretty much whatever you want. They've opened.
It's in D.C., right?
Yeah.
Okay.
They've opened.
It's like you can only do that shit in D.C. You can't be doing that anywhere you want.
Well, that's just, I'm the consumer.
I mean, you can do it. You can do it in Virginia if you open it up. No? You can't open up a bottle?
It's not like you can just open it up and just, I mean, you. As the owner, I think you can. Yeah, but you can
open up the bottle.
Just,
I mean,
do a taste, you know?
Well,
yeah, you can't be a customer and be like, yo, I want to buy this bottle. Can you open it up for me?
You have to justify.
No, of course. You definitely do. Yeah.
Well, this the business model.
Yeah.
Here's the idea. He doesn't mind. I mean, I'm not the only guy buying wine from him. So he doesn't care if I don't buy a bottle that he has opened specifically for me. Because
someone
knows,
will. He'll taste it out to other
people.
Because
he's going to taste it to other, maybe give
sure.
it to other people to taste, and somebody will buy it.
Oh, he won't waste it.
It's a lot of foot traffic. They get a lot of traffic.
They do.
Fair enough.
They do. So I really like that, and they pay attention to what you're looking for, whether you're somebody like me who's been going there for years and they know me and I know them.
That makes sense. No, I'm not going to open a bottle for just any rando that just walks in and be like, I want
to
try this.
Well, you have to understand, too, someone like Tony, who buys, and I can bear witness to this. If he opens it up, Tony loves it. Tony's going to either email someone or give someone a call, and before you know it, you've got 15 or 20 people in there knocking down the door, or more, should I say.
Yeah. You're the best kind of customer.
Oh my God.
You really are.
It's my own personal ruthless self-interest.
He's an advocate.
You know? He's an advocate.
I'm an advocate. I love it, all of that. And I know that... See, I try to live my whole life in accordance with the golden rule. I'm not successful. I don't think you can be, but that's what I try to do. And part of that is as you would have others do unto you. I want you to treat me well. I walk into your store. I want you to be nice to me, and I want you to be interested in what I want because it's my fucking money.
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed at how few places that happens. Huh.
It's basic customer service. I mean,
that's all it is.
It's
very basic, but a lot of people. I'm a payback kind of guy. I believe in payback. So you'll notice I haven't advocated going to any other store here. Not that I wouldn't. I mean, there are other plenty of nice stores, and I've shopped at most of them. There are other stores I would not even go into if I could avoid it. But when you treat me right, I'm absolutely going to treat you right. And that means sharing my experience with people of similar interests, you know?
Yeah.
You find that lacking in a lot of stores, just basic customer service and awareness of and respect for the customer.
To pick one of my least favorite stores, Calvert Woodley. Has that problem. I don't know if it still has that problem because it's been years, since I've shopped at that store for any other reason except for the cheese and the deli section there, which is a real anomaly because it's run by Carlos Estrada, the best cheese guy around, and a very good friend of mine, and I'm very loyal to him, and I buy a lot of cheese from him, or have done when I was buying a lot of cheese, and it rankles me that the poor guy has to work at Calvert Woodley. But no, I walk into that store and I go up to a wine. I've done this several times, and I'll be glad to segue into another story in a minute. I ask for something, and and they can't be bothered. They point. It's over that way.
Huh. No, I'm interested. I'm interested in your views on customer service because it's one of my pet peeves also.
Yeah.
Just how to respect the person in front of you and to pay attention, you know, to what their needs are. And it's very basic, but you find it missing, not just in wine shops, but you find it missing where people make it about themselves.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to be bothered.
It's missing in a lot of places. But wine is a hand sell kind of a business.
Yes.
And if you're not going to hand sell it, then why the fuck are you in business? So the way I look at it. Even if you don't know me, I walk in, the first few words out of my mouth, you know, at least I have an idea what I'm talking about. And I can express my interest cogently so that you can guide me. Well, I don't even know where your stuff is, let alone what stuff you have. And I'm looking for help. Well, you know, you can gauge whether you want to say it's this whole row over here or let me bring, but still you're going to be interested and pay attention. You don't barely look up from whatever you're doing and point. It's not like that's what's paying your salary. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I'm very happy, by the way, to complain if I get treated badly. I mean, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I'm not interested in having anyone treat me poorly, and I'll complain about it if it happens. And by the same token, if I'm treated really well, I go out of my way to make sure that somebody hears about that, too.
Yeah, and what he means by that, Miriam, again, I'm a witness to this as well. Like, the man has an email database, you know, that doesn't end. And, he'll talk to everyone and update them where to go, what to buy. Okay. Or if it's just someone interesting that he met, go check this guy out. I mean, he did it for me, and it paid the rent, and it helped me out of a lot of tight jams. And Tony would come, you know, my shop was in Tyson, so probably Tyson here is, what, 20 miles or so away?
20 minutes,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. But that's without traffic. He would come out of his way, and he wouldn't shop there every day, but he would definitely come by. He would send an email if, you know, you provided a service, you know, that was worthy. And that meant a lot to me at the time and still does. But at the same time, when you look at what's going on, you know, throughout the industry, not just the wine industry, is that type of feedback, you can't put any price on it. You know, when someone says, that this store or this person that works at this store is more than helpful and just provides just basic respect, that goes a long way.
It really does.
It makes you want to come back as a customer. And then when you're given that feedback, when you're given it and you talk to the person that's providing it, it goes a long way for that person. When they do see you again, granted, they're not kissing ass, but it's a bond. It's a relationship.
It is. It's the building of it, you know.
I've used the term business model before. Well, if you don't have relationships in your business model as a wine store, then,
you
again,
have no,
what the fuck are you doing in that line of work?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it really is. It's unfortunate that people have to experience that, and it does exist, in the communities.
Yeah, I really don't understand how. I've been in retail, and I've been a consumer all my life, and I absolutely hate going anywhere where they're not treating me right. You know, I'm not there for my health. I'm there for my convenience.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's their livelihood. Step up.
Yeah. Yeah. Pearson's itself, like you were saying earlier, I mean, and there are a lot of other wine shops outside of Washington, D.C., but you can pick up on it pretty fast. And, you know, when you need that, the wine business is a business where you need to build that relationship, because a lot of times, you know, you don't have time to figure out if this is going to pair nice, or you have a party and you need this style of wine at this price. Do you have anything that fits my needs? You need to be able to trust that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they will come back and they'll tell you if they did not like it or if they loved it. And when they do, it's great. And then they trust your, if it's something that they want to be like, oh, that's exactly what I was looking for. You did great, blah, blah, blah. It's
but even if they didn't like it,
even if,
then you know, then you also can gauge their palate.
I'm sorry, let me do better next time.
Exactly.
Steve Silver ran that store, Pearson's, for many years. Mm-hmm. And finally he retired and sold a store to a guy named, a couple, David and Helen Choi. And many of us were really concerned, you know, that the store was going to change dramatically because a lot of us in my crowd really, really liked the store. So I found absolutely nothing to alarm me about the way this guy is running it. I'm real happy with how that's worked out because it seems to me that the store hasn't changed in any dramatic way, and the small changes are, you know, it's a little less a jumble. It's a little better organized, a little bit better organized, and there's the aisles are a little bit wider. And that, you know, so he hasn't even really changed much at all except for these improvements. And I don't know what he's doing, you know, backstage, but I know he's now into wine by mail, you know, internet sales, which is a step in into the, you know, into the future, I think is pretty cool. So I'm real happy with that, just to put in a little plug for my friend David Choi, because the store really continues to provide the service that I have, that Steve Silver spoiled me with.
You think that the smaller stores are the way to go? Like with the rise of Wegmans and Harris Teeters and even some of the grocery
and
chains.
Costco.
That have,
it's hard for everybody. It's hard for me as a consumer to be willing to go, you know, spend $4 or $5 more per bottle, which sometimes is the case. It's much easier if I know, well, there's only a buck or two difference. But I buy a lot of wine, so I still like to go with the people that I'm going with. And as I mentioned before, I'm buying most of my wine now from Three, for various reasons. And I haven't been back to Pearson's much at all in the last year and a half.
You buy direct from the winery?
Yeah, because Maryland changed the law, but the Three wines are not represented on the shelves in this region, at least not very much, if any.
And what do you mean by Maryland changed the law?
Maryland changed the law a couple of years ago to allow wine producers to
ship direct
gotcha. To consumers.
Okay. Yeah, they have a lot of those old laws throughout the U.S. where, they're laws that have been in place since Prohibition, and you can't ship direct into certain states. And it makes me wonder, like, how does a winery like someone like Matt Klein compete with some of the big corporate-owned wineries? Like a little guy like that, we were talking about wine shops, the small wine shop, and they're trying to compete with a Harris Teeter or a Costco or something like that. You know, we understand that the customer service is what brings them back to a small mom and pop wine shop. But how? What about like? Could you get a Zin from, you know, like Rancho Zabaco or I don't know some of the mass produced ones that are out there? Like, what's stopping someone from going to one of the big major corporations to deal? I don't know how many bottles he produces.
Yeah,
I could imagine the challenges that a small family owned. Winery.
Yeah, you email them, you get his wife.
Yeah. I saw it on the website. I think it's
on, yeah.
Aaron.
Yeah, yeah, I saw it.
They're swell people. I really like them a lot. I don't know them well, but this is a great place to segue. I have a great Matt Klein story.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of his wines, and maybe 5 or 6 years ago, a while back, when I was doing the Tuesday night classes, I organized a class of his wines.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't in this market, but he had he was using a I think it was Country Vintner, I'm not sure, but a big wholesaler who was handled him in other markets, I guess is the way it was. Anyway, they brought the wine in for me, and they brought it to Calvert Woodley to hold for me, because they were dealing with they dealt with probably Country Vintner. So the wine was delivered. The Matt Klein, or Aaron, I guess, said the wine's been delivered. So I called Carlos Estrada at Calvert Woodley, and I said, I'm nervous about this. It's five cases of wine that aren't part of your normal inventory. Will you do me a favor, and at some time when you get a minute, find the wines, count that there are actually five cases of wine.
Yeah, that's nerve-wracking.
For me.
Yeah.
Because the tasting is in about 2 weeks, something like that. I mean, plenty of time, but...
Yeah.
Hands on it, eyes on it.
He calls me back. He said, I have seen the wine there in the store. All five cases are there, and they're intact, and they look like there's nothing broken. And I said, that's great. Thank you very much. The night of the class... Mm. Matt Klein's in town. I've engaged him to give the talk about his wines. We really love to do that when we can. Get the winemaker here.
Yeah, for sure.
So so he's there, and we have about 90 people in the room.
Wow.
It was
full house.
Packed.
Full house, well attended. They can't find the wine. Calvert Woodley can't find the wine.
Oh, God, what a nightmare.
So now I'm on the phone with this idiot at Calvert Woodley, and I say, I start off, I'm calm. I know the wine is there because I talked to Carlos Estrada, and he called me back and said he had seen the wine. So I know it's in the store, but I don't know where it is. And I said, well, you need to find it. I know it's in the store.
It's there. But, just look.
So we go around like this. Meanwhile, there's no wine over here at the class. 90 people. So Matt stands up in front of the class for 45 minutes just talking about wine, his wine,
that's
wine
not,
business.
Not even like...
answering questions. Yeah. Very engaging guy. Nice guy. And... I'm out in the fucking parking lot talking on the phone with this idiot. Finally, they have to call the owner of the store with whom I had recent dealings, cordial, and he told them where the wine would be. You know what he told them? Well, it would be, because I talked to him later. He said, well, it would be in the place where we hold wine that we're not going to put on the floor, but it's paid for.
Yeah.
There's like a designated spot for it.
Yeah. In the store.
Holding area.
Yeah. So
stage.
They said, oh, yeah, they came back on. We found it. So I had somebody that was from the class who was over there waiting for them to come up with this.
Wow.
They loaded them in the car and said, 45 minutes.
That's insane.
With me being pissed off at these idiots. They just were inept.
Well, it says a lot for Matt Klein, the fact that I've been to these events, and there are tables, and when it's 90 people.
It's intimidating.
I mean, yeah. It's like 10 tables. I mean, it's nothing, they're full.
You know, I still get...
They didn't have anything in the glass.
Somebody else will... Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing in the glass. And every now and then, somebody will come up and they'll remember that tasting.
Okay, so
he was so great.
And this is this is to show you, to paint a picture. People are this is rush hour traffic. People are battling traffic to get to this area. It's the end of Georgetown and go up Canal. So it's basically tough to even get there. What time does it start usually?
Well, in those days, it was 7:45.
Yeah, so even still, people are getting off
rush
work.
Hour, but still.
Yeah, but people are getting off work, and you know they've planned this out. So it's the end of a long day. You're going to a wine event and not having any wine for 45 minutes. I mean, that's well into the show. And, that is the show.
And as a matter of long-standing policy, we very, very firmly try to limit the talk to 15 minutes.
Okay.
Very firmly. Because we got to, at the end of, you know, we're there from 7:45 to 10 o'clock. We have to be out of the place by 10 o'clock by contract. So in that time, we have to have the talk. We have to distribute the cheese and collect the money. And then we have to distribute the wine. We usually do it one at a time. We space them 20 minutes apart.
Five different wines.
Five different wines. So, and then we start collecting things that we have to clean up and do dishes and lock up and get out of there all by 10 o'clock. So
wow.
We really don't like it when people just natter on. And I was the president and sort of in charge of that part of it where I would stand up. I'm sorry, I would say we have to move on or else people are not going to be able to taste the wine. And we, anyway, so, and everybody knows, I mean, this is really a firm policy. So, and I had told him about it beforehand.
Yeah, he must have, I mean, he must have had stories for days to keep everyone engaged.
He was great. And I didn't even hear any of the stories.
Because you were on the phone trying to organize.
Yeah.
Full panic mode.
Pretty much, yeah. I was gonna.
That's a pro, though.
Yeah, he's really great, and he makes killer wine.
Yeah,
well, that helps.
Let's try. Let's try the
last one.
The Mataro.
Yeah, let's try it.
All right. So, yeah, we finished with the what kind of vegetarian food? For the
they don't drink. We come to the conclusion that. The vegans and vegetarians, they drink beer.
Or they just drink, and they don't eat.
They don't care
eat
about
with
the
their
parents,
wine.
So, we'll dismiss them. So moving right along.
We'll get letters.
Yeah, well, if we don't get a letter from Calvert Woodley, I'm not worried about the vegetarians and the vegans. I think I can handle them.
You know, it ain't libel if it's true.
Put a beep on it. Beep, beep. This person, beep. Yeah. I want to try this wine. You guys stay engaged. I have to use the restroom real bit. Real quick. Didn't have to announce that, but
thanks,
I did.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks for that. Yeah, that's really.
That's great. Ow.
What happened?
You just poked me.
Hey, it's not that kind of party.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah. You didn't invite me to those kinds.
Aw, you're way out in Maryland.
Hey, I got a basement.
You do. Your basement is such a man cave. It's like,
is that me?
And your phone. Well, yeah. I don't live here. You just guys are just going to leave me on the mic by myself? All right. Well, I'm going to help myself to some more Zen. Yeah. So both men have just left me. One is in the bathroom and one is on the phone. Really good hosts. So I'm drinking more of this, 2007 Zinfandel. And it's opening up actually really nicely.
Hopefully Mary's talking into the mic.
I'm trying to talk into the mic. You guys just leave me by myself. Like, so they just left me.
You're all right. He was
look at this.
I heard the phone blowing up in the he has a phone in the bathroom. So that's really unique.
Really?
Yeah, there's a hotline in there. So I heard it blown up. I was like, oh, here we go. The loudest ringer. Like, I'm not used to having a home phone.
Well, yeah. And he's like, is that me? I'm like, well.
Yeah, you hear that loud thing? So I'm in here trying to use the bathroom, and the phone blew up. I actually picked it up. So I'm using the bathroom, holding with one hand, and I reached over and grabbed it. And I'm like, hello? And I guess Tony picked up the same time. Hey, Tony. And then I heard his voice, so I hung it up. And I, you know, did a double take. I was like, God damn, there's a goddamn phone in the bathroom.
You just did it out of reflex?
Yeah.
Classical conditioning, the phone rings. I'm just going to
pick
up.
Well, after the second ring, I knew they would be very loud for listeners. Because, bring, bring.
It's all good.
It's like old school. But yeah, there's an exact phone like that right there in the bathroom. So,
Nice.
Don't worry, Tony. I wash my hands.
That's good.
I mean, after. How did that work? One hand reached over. It all works out. If there's a phone in the bathroom, I don't think germs is what you're worried about. No?
This is weird.
Huh? How many people have a phone in the bathroom?
That's not very common. Well, I mean, I'll bring my phone into the bathroom sometimes.
I don't know anyone. Well, yeah.
Now.
Because you're looking at something or online or, you know, you're going to be in there for a minute. You know, I mean, you know, you're sitting down, so why wouldn't you? Yeah?
I'm always sitting down, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't think, yeah, you have to,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Know how that works?
I'm a woman, yes, I have to.
I mean, I don't bring a phone in the bathroom. I'm not going to look at the phone while I'm standing. That would just be kind of weird, wouldn't it?
There's more risk of it falling in that case.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Passing by, going to stop in.
But even if I'm seated, I'm not going to hold it for that long. Like, I don't want to be in there that long. It's a lot of investment. I don't,
in the bathroom?
Yeah, I don't like being in the bathroom that long. Not my style.
Some people have to be, though.
Even if I have to, I want to make it quick. So back. Tony is back. What's happening?
Bathroom humor.
I'm not talking about my bowel functions.
That's funny. Well, we didn't get that far. That's why. I cut it off.
You did.
I pinched it off.
You pinched it off. You dropped the kids off at the pool.
Oh, God. See, you guys. Men.
Yeah, no, that's different. I don't mind. Fart humor is fine. but I'm not discussing
movements?
My own.
We were just filling the time while you were on the bat phone.
There you go.
The hotline.
That's right.
So, what's this one now?
A Mataro.
The Merved.
The Monastrell.
Known by many names. Let's try this. This is nice. This is a nice nice little flight.
That smells good.
Oh, wow.
I like this.
A little bit more spicy.
Yeah, I'm going to like that.
Dark,
a little spicier. It's a little
this is the 09?
Yeah.
This is the 09 vintage, right?
Yeah, I think. Yeah,
we're doing 07, 10, and 09. Nice nose.
Yeah, it's part of that family that, like I was saying, that you grow them in Europe, and they're one thing. And, of course, the prime example of that phenomenon, in my mind, is Malbec. Because it's not a widely acclaimed varietal for making, you know, wine of itself. It's used as a blending grape almost always in France.
But also in the past, you know, 5+ years, it's taken on its own form outside of France.
Yeah, well, and they actually brought it back in, I guess, the early 1900s, brought it over the Italian, and I don't know who it was, whoever it was, brought it from France
to Argentina.
I think a lot of the French may have. I'm not sure. No, so don't quote me on this. But I know a lot of French wineries started buying up property in Argentina and making wine.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh yeah. But Argentina, it thrives.
It's a perfect place for Malbec to grow.
Yeah, it grows beautifully there,
and it's just unrecognizable if you compare it side by side with a Malbec, specific Malbec from France.
Oh, yeah.
So you would compare this to Malbec?
Mm.
Well, much like Malbec,
yeah.
The Mourvèdre as well, it just is a different critter when you plant it in a different place.
Fair enough, yeah.
And, I mean, it's the same thing with Australian wines.
Yeah.
They came from European stock originally. And
Syrah, you mean Shiraz?
Shiraz.
Yeah.
Shiraz.
I mean, they changed the name.
Rezzy Matazzy.
If it's different, it's not very much different. It's obviously comes from the same basis, same ancestry. And it's a it's unrecognizable as the critter. And there's nothing wrong with the Syrahs they make in the Rhone in France.
I thought I was going to say there's nothing wrong with the critters.
No, it's just that they're really different.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating.
I've had some back on, just jump quick, get my words quickly on Malbec. I've had some good ones out of Washington State.
Really?
Yeah. Charlie Hoppus does a Malbec out of his Fidelitas winery.
Are you talking about
ridiculous? It's such a sick, twisted.
It's been a long time since I've had their wines.
And that meaning delicious. Delicious Malbec. He doesn't make a big run of them. I don't know if you've met Charlie Hoppus. A gentleman I used to work with out of Washington State has a winery called Fidelitas. He's known as the wine boss. And he does Bordeaux varietals. So he does Merlot, Cabernet, Malbec. And stunning, spectacular bottle of wine. So it's fun when I see something like that where you wouldn't think of that varietal to be or to grow. That's
over
why
there, yeah.
That's why what you know looking at this wine by Matt Klein, the Matero, that's a dynamite bottle of wine. I mean, this right here will go toe-to-toe with a cab. I don't know what this one retails for. But just,
I can't tell you exactly, but
I'll look it up.
My guess is it's not going to be any more than $20.
Yeah, I mean,
$20. That's impressive. That's a tasty little wine for $20.
It is, Miriam.
I'm just
saying. It's a tasty little wine.
It is.
It's got, I mean, everything we've tasted on the table, if you're saying they retail under $30 a bottle, $25 a bottle, or less.
I don't think you make, I guess there's a few things that he makes that winery prices like $34. I don't think he makes anything more than that.
It works for me.
And
but these aren't like typical California style at all. I find them to have like more layers, more spice, like a little bit of an old world style to it. You know, there's a little funk on the
read the blurb on the back.
So this one's a little bit more expensive. So this is from the winery is $32 a bottle for the 2010.
This is high end three.
So this is 2010 on the website. I don't know which.
No, the one we're drinking
is the 9.
Wait, it's not. Yeah, it's the 09.
Yeah.
The first Zin we had was 07 and the second one was 10.
Excuse me. Yeah, but just a spectacular bottle of wine.
Yeah, I've been tasting wines
fairly
seriously for 40 years or more. I have never, ever, ever joined one of these we select it for you and send it to you every whatever clubs
weird.
Ever.
I feel like those are kind of a scam. They just put their closeout stuff on that.
Yeah, so a lot of his wines are, as Tony said, they're $16, $18 for Zins. He's got two Zins. Yeah, under $20 a bottle.
That's pretty sweet.
Then he does some old vine. He does a Petite Syrah for $20. He does some high-end, not really high-end, but just a different tier, which looks like the same label as the ones we're trying today, which are $34. 32 and 32. So 34, he has a live oak Zinfandel.
That's
one of them.
Yeah. So this is his upper tier.
So I look for the sales, and I get them for less. But
you're just a smart wine buyer. Well, you know the game.
It's not his first time to the rodeo.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm playing the game. That's the point.
You're playing it right.
But you don't have to. In fact, what I was saying is that I've joined the 3 wine club, and so every time they have a release, I get a couple of bottles in the mail, and I pay winery price for those. I don't quibble. I mean, you know, that's the deal. But so I get to see everything. Probably not everything he makes, but most of what he makes.
Someone's at the door.
Someone's knocking at the door.
Yeah,
somebody
ringing
the bell.
So yeah, back to what you were saying, Miriam. Smart shopper, because I mean he deals direct with the winery,
mm-hmm.
and he deals directly with retailers that he has that relationship with. I mean, how many times? That was Tony in the background. I guess someone came to the door. A lot of traffic, huh? But if you're dealing with someone and they're looking for a cab, I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there in the market that isn't going to possess this quality.
No,
you know,
this complexity. Yeah. This like, you know, there's a lot of wines are just one note, you know, and a lot of people stick to the same wine that they know. And if they'll do like a Chardonnay and they expect oak, if there's no oak, they'll be like, I don't like this. And it's like, try it, you know. But
they're handcrafted by someone who's
you can feel the love almost. You know what I mean?
He's an advocate.
Yeah,
as Tony said,
that's a great word actually. Yeah.
And to be that involved, that hands on, and that passionate. It's going to show through on your product.
Yeah, you know? And it does here.
It's going to show through on your product. It's going to show through.
But it's like you can tell when it's like, you know, produced in masses. There's just like.
This is the formula. This is what we're putting out. This is the label that people all know. And this is the product. This is what we're doing.
There's nothing special.
Well, it's what I've been ranting about, you know, since I started the podcast about the film industry or any industry. It doesn't have to. It's all related, the way everything that we're putting into our minds and our bodies. And if something's mass produced, I mean, you're not going to get all those, you know, there's nothing wrong with it.
There's just something missing.
But yes, there's some elements missing. And, you know, you're going to want those flavors. It's the flavor that you savor, you know? And yeah.
I'm an advocate of that.
You has to be. I mean, you have to be. You have to be. You have to be involved.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be present, you know, and that's an important part of anything in life. It doesn't have to just be wine related. I don't think.
Yeah, I have to admit that sometimes, you know, when you're day in, day out, you know, let's say in retail, for example, on my end as an employee in that realm, it's difficult to make each interaction unique. You know, I try to. But there's moments where you kind of sound like, oh, delivery.
And that's when
is that more wine?
But when you get like that, you just need to take a step back or take time off, regroup. And the fact that you recognize that. Some people don't even recognize it. You know what I mean?
And when I catch myself sounding like a robot, I try to stop myself. And I'm like, okay, you know, I need to change this up, you know? And every person is unique, so I'm trying to cater to them and listen more, and then it'll change my tune. But
you got to take a step back, and then you have to reevaluate. Some people, they don't even recognize that they're doing something wrong, and they just do what Tony said. Point. It's over there. Where can I find?
Oh, no, no.
Where can I find this? Point. You know what I mean? No, so you can't do that. You can see. Just from the wines that we've tasted, Tony's back, everyone. We were talking about the passion and how important it is to be present in what you're doing. We can tell from this lineup, this flight, that Matt Klein he's present. He's an advocate. He's very passionate about what he's producing. He's definitely not overcharging.
No.
No, no, no.
No, he's definitely not
almost
overcharging.
Undercharging, but you know. Yeah. Well,
I wonder what the symbolism.
I mean, I like the guy, but I'm just trying to say,
it's a compliment.
I wonder what the symbolism is. It's some sort of abstract art on the cover.
Now, that's the segue. Turn around. Read that.
I have to read the back. Okay. Frank, can you pronounce the last name for me? Evangelo?
Sure.
That's not
just
it.
Roll with it.
Yeah, that's
and his
good.
Family are one of the most. Meticulous growers I know. He also happens to farm some of the oldest Zin vines in California. The dirt, the microclimate, and sustainable growing. Oh, it's sustainable growing.
Those three things.
From vineyard and... Oh, okay. Those are the three. That's where the three comes from. From vineyard to bottle form the cornerstones of three. These critical elements are in every bottle we make. So
that's what
the
that
dirt,
is.
Microclimate, and sustainable growing. That's where the three comes from.
Yeah, of course, he modestly doesn't say anything about the importance of the winemaker.
No mention.
But that's, you know, I don't know well enough to say he's modest, but I know that that philosophy that he uses is that he believes in keeps him really out of the natural process. He monitors it. He makes things clean and determines what the grape wants to do, and then encourages it to do that rather than making it do something else. So
he has a mission.
Yeah, and of course that's integral to the whole thing. And he's got a passion.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, and that comes with life experience. That comes with being out there, putting yourself out there, taking risks, working for other people and figuring out that this, that, or the other is not the best thing for you, and you plot your own course. And we've talked about this on the podcast, about you taking, taking command of your vessel and, setting your own course. And that's what he did. And just as simple as the wines that we've not as simple as the wines are, but as simple as what did we taste? Three wines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out his passion.
Yeah, no, it's there. It's pretty
really
obvious.
Doesn't. I mean, it's right there in your face, and that's what I get out of these wines. I know I was trying to figure out what we were going to podcast about. I was very excited about podcasting, with Tony and Jeff. But Jeff he wasn't feeling too well today. So we hope he has a speedy recovery. But not knowing what we're going to talk about, and I remember last time Tony had mentioned Matt Klein, and I think that was for me. It was I like learning. I love when I talked earlier about not being an expert on food. And the spices and the actual pairing. One of the things that drives me are the people. You know, what's behind this person? Not just winemakers, but consumers like yourself, Tony, and the people that work in the environment like Miriam. I'm very interested in people, and that's what moves me in learning about them. And just sitting here with you today, learning about the vineyard, three vineyard or the winery, three. And Matt Klein it's fascinating. I'm still fascinated, and I want to try more of the wine. I want to try the Petit Sirah now. Amazing, right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. This is good stuff.
He even sent me a rosé.
Oh, yeah, rosé made out of?
Maybe Sangiovese. I can't remember, but it was nice.
Yeah.
It made me go, I got to go buy a lot of this.
Yeah.
But you enjoyed it.
I did.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, just, it's where it's at. I mean, for those of you listening, like sometimes when you find your path and you're passionate about something, stay with that. And sometimes in life, who said it best? I think I've talked about him before. Bobcat Goldthwait, he said, keep quitting until you find something that you don't want to quit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's perfect, and I think that's what landed Matt Klein here, and producing the wines that he handcrafts, you know. And you have to go through that journey, you know. You have to go
it's
through
not easy
that
necessarily,
life.
But
no,
yeah,
it's life.
It is life, and Tony, we appreciate you spending some time with us. We definitely appreciate that you're an advocate. Of yeah. wines, of wine shops that provide that customer service.
Yeah, and Tony Quinn's place, another one.
That's right. That. Tony's Tony Quinn is he's been on the podcast. Got to get him back on.
Yeah. What's it? Cleveland Park. Right?
Cleveland yeah. Park yeah. Wine and Spirits, I believe, or in Cleveland Park in Washington D.C.
And another one, while I'm thinking about it, is Chevy Chase.
Yeah. Chevy Chase Liquors. Is it Chevy Chase Liquors? Is Chevy Chase Wine and
Spirits?
Spirits
I think. I think it's the one on the left side of Connecticut as you're going north.
And the thing is, like, I could give shout outs to all sorts of retailers.
The west side of Connecticut.
But the key thing is for those of you listening is to find the one that talks to you. You know what I mean? Like, there may be someone that goes to one that you may not like that they relate to them. But the key thing is to find that relationship.
Yeah, that's really if you want to buy wine and you don't want to just piss your money down a rat hole, You get the advice of somebody who knows about wine and is interested in making you come back to his place.
Good way is also to go to the tastings. I mean, when you go to the tastings, yeah. That's, for me, the best learning experience.
Drink
you
know? More.
Not only that, but you just, the feedback, you get to know what people's palates are like, you know, and you know what to suggest to them with what they say about the wines on the table, you know?
Yeah.
So
people who are present,
gauge,
yeah, people who are present, they're in the moment, they're paying attention, and they're acknowledging, you know, the people that's, you know, in front of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you can pick up on it pretty fast.
Yeah.
You can pick up on it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I can, I worked in the Vienna Vintner. I was at the shop last Wednesday, and I don't know Victor's inventory that well, but I know the varietals to get around, and a lot of customers came in and they were asking for this, that, or the other. So I just kind of, I don't know where this or that, but I do know this and this varietal. I know, you know, I can put the vintages together. I can do the math, and it was fun to engage, you know, at the spur of the moment to see what I came up with. And you know, it's retail is very interesting. It's a very interesting, well, especially with wine, because wine's up close, personal, intimate, and you know, you get a chance to talk to someone and you know, suggest to them, well, try this one. I've had, and yeah, that's what I did. You know, it's just it's, you know, it's not a,
it's pretty personal.
Yeah,
you know,
it's very really? Personal. Yeah. And I even had one gentleman come in, and he had a bad bottle. Yeah, I had this one. It was corked. The cork was soaked all the way to the top. You know, no problem. Just pick out another one. I gave him another one and left a note. And retailers should do that.
Yeah, they should.
You know, without question. It's like, oh, he was like, here, smell it. There's no need. I don't want to smell it. You know, you just keep that soggy, funky cork to yourself.
Well, but as a retailer, you want to be able to do that so you can give accurate feedback to the wholesaler, because the guy might come and say it's corked, and it's not corked. It's something else. There's something wrong with it, but it's not corked.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to tell the wholesaler what's wrong with it. And nobody up the line should ever have any issue with that kind of transaction.
No, we don't.
So you find a place that has an issue with that, and you stay the hell far away from them.
Yeah. You're right. So I think we found something that we want to get more of and not stay away from. So if you guys get a chance, definitely go. You can go on 3winecompany.com, and you can get more information about Matt Klein, his wines, and what he's most passionate about.
I'm not 100% sure of this, but I believe that Three can ship to Maryland. I know they can ship to Maryland. I believe they cannot ship to D.C. or Virginia.
Mm. So maybe
they can ship to D.C. Pretty sure not Virginia, because I get friends of mine that buy Klein wines, get them shipped here, and then they come and pick them up.
Well, the beauty of it, too, is that
Have your wines shipped to Sineas's house. Sineas Spice will be like, yo,
well, I mean,
lots of cases here ready for our listeners.
Well, Three is available in the Virginia market at select wine shops. The Vienna Vintner can order it and has had it on the shelf.
Yeah, we have.
We want to make sure that we'll get in Victor's ear and see that he keeps it on the shelf.
I'll talk to
him. So definitely you guys go to 3winecompany.com, and that's spelled T-H-R-E-E, winecompany.com. Check that out and, you know, support your local wine shops in your area, wherever you live. Guys, I appreciate you joining us, Tony. So for Tony Guida, a.k.a. Sineas Vice, Marion Tazi, and, of course, your boy Malcolm Riddle, Domino motherfucker.
I'm your mama, I'm your daddy, I'm that nigga in the alley. I'm your doctor when in need, want some coke, have some weed. You know me, I'm your friend, your main boy, thick and thin. I'm your pusher man. I'm your pusher man. is.